Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
This Day in Music Radio, documentaries, an in-depth look at some of the most important musicians in the history of music.
Welcome to part three of the story of Vanilla Fudge drummer Carmine Appice. He is one of rock's most influential drummers, inducted into the Hollywood Rock Wall, where his handprints are now side by side with his heroes Buddy Rich and Gene Krupa. So what is the history of heavy rock drumming? Here is Carmine Appice.
The drumming style of rock drumming, what we consider today's rock drumming, came from four different drumming guys in four different bands. Ginger Baker in the Cream, Mitch Mitchell from Jimi Hendrix, Keith Moon, and Vanilla Fudge with me. I used to beat the drum so bad that I would dent the heads and break cymbal stands. I'd break everything. And then I went into a pawn shop one day and I saw this 26 bass drum sitting up there for $5. I said, you know what? I'm going to buy that because a bigger drum, louder. So I bought this big 26 bass drum. I recovered it myself to match my Red Sparkle kit that I used on You Keep Me Hanging On. Now, on record, you can get away with making it sound bigger, you know, but live, it was the volume thing. There were no PA systems then, you know. I influenced John. He told me I was his idol, you know, and that when I met him, I said, man, I love that triplet thing you do on Good Times, Bad Times. He goes, what do you mean? I got it from you. I said, man, I don't do that. He said, yeah, you did. You did it on the first album. I said, I did? What I did was, I was the only one that played loud, really hard. Ginger Baker was a jazz drummer. Mitch played like a jazz drummer. He didn't play hard. And Keith just played crazy. His approach was mad, you know, like his life.
Rob Wallace.
You know, I loved his sound, the way his drums sounded on everything I've heard. I love that big, big open bass drum sound. His impact on John Bonham. John took Carmine's sound and put his kind of, you know, stamp on it. But I think the essence of it was Carmine's big open, you know, snare drum, tom-toms, and bass drum sound. You know, the John Bonham thing, I mean, I don't know if you could have a bigger disciple. I don't know what you'd call that person that kind of,
it'll,
you know,
do, yeah.
Certainly doesn't get any bigger than that. So, I mean, just that alone is you know, an incredibly, you know, important in the whole lineage of you know, rock and roll music and rock and roll drumming.
Here is musician and singer with the Reformed Cactus, Jimmy Coons.
I was such a huge Led Zeppelin fanatic that, you know, then you backtrack and you go back and you see and you read all these things about how the only band that Led Zeppelin ever opened for was the Vanilla Fudge. And I know that Pagey and Robert Plant were huge Vanilla Fudge fans, and as well with the guys in Deep Purple and all of those iconic bands were, you know, the template was they were drawn from the Fudge and Vanilla Fudge.
Here is Bobby Rondinelli.
When I was a kid, there were only a few guys. There was Ginger Baker, Dino Danelli from the Rascals, and Carmine. And Carmine, for me, was the number one. And then other guys came in, like Bonham a little bit later, and Mitch Mitchell and people like that. But there wasn't many guys breaking ground. Not in rock, anyway.
Yeah, yeah. How influential do you think Carmine was then on what was to become heavy rock or progressive rock or whatever you call it?
Well, I know a lot of musicians say that, you know, the Vanilla Fudge was, a lot of famous musicians, Vanilla Fudge was groundbreaking as a whole band. You know what I mean? They took it to different places. They had dynamics. They had energy. They had really great ability. When other bands were just playing, like, pop songs, these guys were doing some crazy stuff, you know? And it still holds up. You listen to some of that old stuff, man, and it's just like, it still sounds great, you know?
Vanilla Fudge played alongside many of the great musical acts of all time, including The Doors, Mamas and Papas, Led Zeppelin, of course, and Jimi Hendrix. Here's Tim Bogert again.
Always very inspiring. They were amazing bands, and we would watch them and take the good points of their show and incorporate it into ours. We stole from everyone we saw, which I think is the best compliment you can give someone.
On bass, Mr. Noel Redding. On drums, Mr. Mitch Mitchell. On vocals and guitar, Mr. Jimi Hendrix, the Jimi Hendrix Experience.
Hendrix, of course, was wonderful. I took a lot of stuff from him. Watched them all like a hawk. Eric used to let me sit behind Jimmy's amps during the show. And I would literally watch what he did and watch what worked and what impressed the crowd and then try to incorporate that into our show. Led Zeppelin was absolutely wonderful. They were very green at the time, and their first tour they were okay, and then they came back on their second tour and opened for us again, and then they were amazing. The transformation was like night and day. It was really quite amazing what they pulled off on the second tour. We did a show in somewhere around Oklahoma City. I'm not exactly sure where it was because, again, it's a very long time ago. Zeppelin was opening for us, and they literally spent the crowd. They were so good that they just wore the crowd out, and we realized that. So I went out and announced to the audience that there's no way in hell we can possibly follow this, so we're not going to try. And we brought all the fellas out from Led Zeppelin, and all of us jammed for the next hour and a half, and it went over really well. We always wondered who would be the first band to, quote, knock us off, and it was Zeppelin.
In 1969, at a festival in Long Island, New York, the seeds of a new musical project were sown. On the bill that night were the Edwin Hawkins Singers, 10 years after, and the Jeff Beck Group featuring Rod Stewart and Cozy Powell.
So we were there, we're hanging, you know, and hanging with Jeff and Rod and Alvin Lee and, you know, everybody's friends. And we had met Jeff a bunch of times in England, but, you know, nothing was ever mentioned about us playing together. That evening, while the Jeff Beck Group was on, Led Zeppelin showed up in full glory. Led Zeppelin was the hottest thing. They went up and jammed with the Jeff Beck Group. I remember rolling my drums out as well, and then John Bonham was playing either my kit or someone else's kit, and he stood up and took off all his clothes on the stage. He's totally nude. And my mother and father in the audience, and, you know, this is weird, you know. And he comes off the stage, and we're going, great. And the audience now is going absolutely bananas berserk. So we're going, how are we going to follow this? So that was like, to me and Tim, the beginning of the end. We couldn't follow it. It was very difficult. We were up there, and we felt like, you know, this is the new, out with the old, in with the new kind of vibe. And then after the show, John Bonham came up to us and told me and Tim, you know, you guys should play with Jeff Beck. Jeff loves you guys. He wants to play with you guys. And we go, really? That's cool. And now Jeff Beck had the same attorney we had. Jimi Hendrix, Jeff Beck, the Rascals, Herman's Hermits, the Yardbirds. We all had the same attorney, Steve Weiss. Almost family, you know what I mean? So Peter Graham worked with the attorney, so we started talking about us playing with Jeff Beck. Me, Tim, Jeff Beck, and Rod Stewart.
Like supergroup.
Unbelievable supergroup. And that was the fad then.
Why did it not happen?
Jeff got in a car accident, and he was unable to play or do anything for a year and a half. And then we found that Rod didn't want to play with Jeff. And then it ended up being like a press thing. I'll never play with that Wally again, you know. And then it got bad, and they never worked together until People Get Ready that I helped instigate.
In 1970, with Vanilla Fudge disbanded and the Jeff Beck Project on hold, the band Cactus formed. Along with Apice and Bogert, guitarist from Mitch Ryder and the Detroit Wheels Jim McCarthy joined, with Rusty Day on vocals.
Well, you can't judge honey by looking at the bees. Can't judge apple by looking at the tree.
We tried to form the band around 1969, 1970, but Jeff had a very serious car accident at that time. So in the interim, Carmine and I put Cactus together and went out on the road with that. And then a little while later, Jeff was better and said, let's form the group. And so we decided we'll give that a shot. And it was supposed to be Rod, Jeff, myself, and Carmine. But I think Rod and Jeff had personal problems, and Rod backed out. So we did it as a trio, and that worked for about 2 years, I suppose, and then that was over.
The lineup lasted for 3 years, producing three albums. Here is Fan and the current lead singer with Cactus, Jimmy Coons.
I always liked the Fudge and was aware of the Fudge, but I was much more of a Cactus fan. My older brother had a couple of Cactus records, and I think what struck me about the band was, you know, how they fired on all four cylinders was a pretty remarkable band, and plus being a frontman, lead singer myself. I love the riffs. I love Jim McCarty's style of playing guitar. It's straight ahead, no nonsense. He writes riffs from heaven. Timmy is a Carmine, but on the bass, and I'm lucky enough to be singing with him. So.
In 1972, Beck, Bogart, and Appice finally got together.
Very superstitious. Writing on the wall.
Tell me the story about Stevie Wonder's Superstition, then.
Well, the way I understood it, Jeff played on Stevie's Talking Book album, and then in return, Stevie was supposed to write a song for Jeff, and the song was Superstition. I believe it was a Jeff riff, and he wrote the song, but he wasn't supposed to record it, Stevie, until Jeff got it out. So we recorded it with Beck, Bogart, and Appice. And while we were recording it, we just did it a rock way, slowed down, and then just as we were mixing it, or halfway through the recording, we find out that Stevie Wonder released it, and it went to number one. So Jeff and his people were really, really pissed off about it. So by the time ours came out, it was sort of like a Vanilla Fudge arrangement on it again. Here we go.
There we go. Back to square one.
It was still a big song on the record. You know, and the record probably sold 1 million units around the world.
Billy Amendola.
When I heard Beck, Bogart, and Appice, to me, that was one of my favorite records of the time to this day. I mean, that stuff comes on my iPod, and I just love it. You know, I stop, I crank it up. I think it's one of the best of his playing.
Around this time, Appice started his drum school in New York and produced the most successful rock drumming manual, Realistic Rock. It was the first serious book on rock drumming aimed at kids who wanted to make it in the music business.
Yeah, I went into a Sam Ash music store, which is a music chain in America. At the time, they only had one or two stores, and I saw a drum book in there with, you know, in 71, we all looked like hippies. You know, we had the long hair, beards, and T-shirts, and I saw this guy on the cover of a book that looked had an Elvis Presley haircut, learned to play rock drums. And I looked at the book. I said, this guy is like played out. So I opened the book and looked at the material, and that's played out too. And I said, you know what? I'm going to write a book. You know, I got the technical skills to write. I'm going to write the book. I know rock like the back of my hand, you know. So I wrote the book. It took me 30 days, and then we released it.
In 1976, Carmine joined the megastar Rod Stewart, where he would have his greatest commercial success.
I knew Rod through the Faces days because Cactus played a lot of shows with the Faces. So we did at least 3 or 4 months with them in America. And we all became good friends. So I knew Rod pretty well. And the way I got in Rod's band was by calling Rod's tour manager, Pete Buckland, who was at the time was on tour with him. And I had heard that Rod went to 25 drummers in L.A. and he couldn't find anybody. So I called him and said, well, what about me, man? You know, he says, well, you're always busy. I said, yeah, but I'd love to play with Rod. It'd be fun, you know? It was great. 7 years is a lot of fun.
In 1979, he co-wrote what was to be Rod Stewart's most successful record.
See, in those days, I don't know how Rod is now, but in those days, Rod always trying to be cutting edge. Missing You by the Stones was big. He says, we need a song like that. I went home and I wrote the song, you know, chords and stuff, along the lines of Missing You. when we finally started recording with Tom Dowd and Andy Johns, it started out that way. We even had a conga player, and we had a click, and we kept recording it. And basically, when we did it with our band, we had, you know, three guitars, bass, keyboard, conga, and drums. It sounded pretty rock. It was pretty cool. But then little by little, Tom Dowd, the producer, put an orchestra on it and synthesizers. And as you add more stuff on it, the track kept shrinking and shrinking.
It got lost somewhere.
Yeah, so before you know it, it became a real disco song instead of a rock song.
Do You Think I'm Sexy spent 4 weeks at the top of the Billboard Hot 100 and topped the UK charts. In 1981, a piece co-wrote Young Turks for Stewart. It reached the top five in America and the top 10 in the UK.
Well, that was written by me and Dwayne Hitchings mostly in Dwayne's studio. And we did it with a drum machine. Those were the days when drum machines were just starting to sound like real drums. So I went in and put hi-hat and cymbal crashes on it to make it sound a bit more authentic. You know, but that was, you know, I started seeing the direction of, it was getting a bit wimpy. You know?
Still a successful record, though.
I know, big.
In 1982, he joined the wild man of rock, Ted Nugent.
He was different because he never did any drinking, no drugs, nothing. And he was pretty wild, so he didn't need any of that stuff. The way I got in his band was the beginning of 81, we did the American Music Awards with Rod Stewart and Ted. And Ted came up to me and said, when you're done playing wimpy rock and roll and you want to play a man's rock and roll, give me a call. So that stuck in my head. So when the thing with Rod, you know, when we split up, actually, I called Ted. And I said, well, I think I'm ready to play some man's rock and roll. What do you think?
During 1983, a piece joined another legendary rock and roller, Ozzy Osbourne.
Ozzy was a really nice guy. Then he would drink and drink and drink. By the end of the night, he was oblivious. You know, he'd forget lyrics. It was Ozzy, you know, just like the TV show. They asked me to get involved in finishing the album. So I was brought in as a associate producer to help mix the album in this studio here in America. When I came in, I was with Ozzy in New York City, me and Ozzy, and Sharon left Ozzy in my care, basically. We recorded here, and we did the last few vocals and mixed it. I helped with getting the drum sound and helped mix it, and that's where I got my credit from. And I actually had a share of the album as far as, you know, bonuses and stuff. And then, me and Ozzy flew to London on the SST. And when we got there, we went to an old asylum somewhere, and we cut the Bark at the Moon video. The band only played for the last 30 seconds or 40 seconds of the video. It was all about this story of Ozzy becoming a vampire, you know, with that. It took him hours upon hours to get that makeup put on and everything. And it was, you know, it's probably his most famous video. Bark at the Moon. It was a lot of fun, and it was going great. We did the European tour, and when I got to America, I had told everyone, Sharon and everyone, that I do masterclasses. A masterclass is like a 30-person class that I would do before I went on stage, like a couple hours before. So I guess, you know, my guess is Sharon didn't like all that because she fired me. So I started King Cobra. King Cobra really came about after I got fired from Ozzy, and I didn't know what to do. So took the approach the opposite of Motley Crue. They were all black-haired with a blonde lead singer. I was already black hair and had colors in my hair, so I said, let me get all blonde guys and put colors in their hair. So we did that, and it actually worked, and we, you know, we did pretty well with King Cobra.
A year later, Vanilla Fudge reformed, releasing the album Mystery. In 1987, he joined the group KGB and played on Dogs of War, a track from Pink Floyd's Momentary Lapse of Reason album.
Bob Ezrin left me a message. He's a big producer, and said, "Carmine, I'm doing this session, and I'd like you to play on. Just screaming for Carmine drum fills." I said, "Okay." So I called him back. I said, "What are you doing?" He says, "I'm producing the new Pink Floyd album." I said, "Really?" I said, "You want me to play on Pink Floyd's album?" So we set up a date, and I went down there, and that was it. I went down to a record store. And I actually bought a cassette, and that was the first time I heard it. Was in this hotel room in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada.
In 1989, he dissolved King Cobra and joined John Sykes on his Blue Murder project. In 2003, he met his partner, talk show host Leslie Radio Chick Gold, live on air.
Ladies and gentlemen, standing in the spotlight without no doubt.
It's the Radio Chick.
Carmine was a guest on my radio show. I was hosting a morning show at a classic rock station here in town. But I have to tell you, I didn't want him as a guest. He was pitched to me a few times, and I turned him down. So I didn't think he'd be a good guest. I didn't know much about him. I wasn't a fan. And I thought he would be boring and self-centered like most musicians.
Had you heard of Vanilla Fudge anyway?
Vaguely. I wasn't really a fan of him or his work, to be honest with you. But my producer finally prevailed upon me and said, "No, Carmine Appice will be a good guest, especially here in New York City. Everybody knows him."
She didn't want me on the show, actually. Her producer is the one that said, "You should bring Carmine on the show." So she booked me at 7:30 in the morning, figuring out I'm a rock star and I wouldn't come in. And I did.
Now, you probably know Carmine because he's a drummer for Vanilla Fudge. You may or may not know that Carmine has also played with Jeff Beck, Rod Stewart, Nugent,
Ozzy,
right? Wow. Who am I leaving out? Did I hit the high points?
And once we became a couple, I speak about my personal life on the air, and when Carmine became a big part of my personal life, he became a big subject on the show, which was hard for him. Rock stars are used to being worshipped, so hearing that you were lousy in bed...
It was weird. This was even worse. We were driving back from Washington, D.C., and when she was on satellite radio, and I'm hearing on the radio that just describing the first night that we were together and how it wasn't, sexually wasn't that great, and that she never even orgasmed, but she faked it. Right? And I'm driving in the van with the rest of the band. Nice, and I'm going, "Yeah, this is nice."
My boyfriend is a rock star. It has been revealed that he had slept with 4,500 women before me. To get back at him, he was scheduled to come on my show one of several times he had been on, and we had just gone to a new station. He and a band that he loosely put together were going to be our first in-studio musical guests. They called themselves the Carmine Appice 10, but there were only four of them. His first number was the Radio Chick Blues, where he complained about being subject to public ridicule on my show.
"I didn't know being your man would ruin my life. Love you, baby, but Lord have mercy. The first time we slept together, I thought it all went well. Then I heard on your radio show, I didn't ring your bell. Back on the tour bus. Imagine my humiliation. My band, road crew, and manager."
He would complain about it afterwards, but Carmine loves attention.
"I got my life on the street, I got the radio to blues. Yeah, I got my life on the street, I got the radio chick blues."
Vanilla Fudge celebrated their 50th anniversary tour in 2017. They appeared on The Jimmy Fallon Show, and Carmine published his autobiography, Stick It, in 2016.
"It's our very first hit single. It goes something like this over here. Check it out."
Well, we're here back in Brooklyn, where you were born. What is it like now, looking back on the career that's, you know, it must have seemed like forever? You started in 66. Can you look back and appraise it, or is it really difficult?
Well, it's difficult to do that, but because I haven't been in a situation like, you know, so many drummers where they're with one group for 40 years, or 30 years, and they go out and play arenas once every 18 months, and you know exactly what life is going to be like. You release an album, you do another arena tour, and then you go home for a year. My career has never been like that. You know, it's been up, it's been down, it's been playing arenas, it's been playing theaters, playing clubs, playing, doing clinics. You know, I always had to look to the next thing for me to do. You know, I've had a lot of great times, and luckily worldwide. This mug has been around 40 years, you know.
It's going to be around for another 40 years, hopefully.
Oh, that would be interesting.
It's amazing. I don't know how many other drummers around that have the longevity. You know, 5 decades of top level, kind of at the top of his game, playing and performing.
He's a very smart businessman. He's very, very good. A great musician, anyone can tell. He's really a down-to-earth guy.
He's got a youthful exuberance about him, and I think that he never lost that inner child and that inner spark of creativity, and he's one of the most driven people that I've ever met in my life.
I think he's very influential for being one of the pioneers of a lot of things back in the 60s when he started. I mean, he had oversized drums. He was the first one to use those drums. And nobody saw anything like that. And then he was twirling the sticks and not playing it safe. No 2 and 4 there. Just being really aggressive, which was great.
Every time I see Carmine, you know, he'll whip out something new. And it's still exciting. And it's fresh. It's about not being afraid to take a chance. And it's about not being safe. Pushing the envelope a little, and Carmine is always doing that. His bands have you know been influential on the music scene, period, with the Fudge and Cactus and Jeff Beck, Beck Bogart and the Peace. So he's been very influential, but on drumming, he's one of the few guys you know by the first name.
All joking aside, you know, Carmine is really part of my extended family. It's always a pleasure to be in his company, and his playing embodies his prodigious technique, great thundering groove, and a sense of theatrics that his audiences love. He plays for the band, gives everything to the music, and gives even more to his audiences. He is, as far as I'm concerned, the consummate professional who also knows more about the construction and manufacture of drums than anyone I know.
You have been listening to the story of Vanilla Fudge drummer Carmine Appice.
This Day in Music Radio. Documentaries. An in-depth look at some of the most important musicians in the history of music.
When we first started out, it was like we thought it might last at most 10 years.
It's just the truth is I have a soulful voice. It's all like done live. And I've kept it quite simple.
I had Dazed and Confused in the way that it's heard on the first album, that whole construction of it.
This Day in Music Radio. Documentaries.
For more information, go to thisdayinmusic.com.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.